Half-Life by Indigo. Self-flagellation, thought Rodney as he walked morosely under Lakeshore Drive, a plastic bag filled with takeout from Tie 55 clutched in his hand. That's what this is. Masochistic self-flagellation. He emerged from the tunnel and squinted automatically as the blindingly bright sun hit him. The point looked, predictably, like a spread from some sappy Chicago Park District brochure, where all of Chicago plays. Students from the university lay on patchworked fields of beach towels. Yuppie families barbecued on hibachis. Old ladies clutched their walkers and shuffled along the paths at a snail's pace. There was even a kid down on the rocks, throwing sticks into the lake that his Labrador kept enthusiastically swimming out to retrieve. Rodney thought idly of Jaws, and how much it would break up the shittiness of his day if an oversized mechanical shark suddenly made that dog its tea-time snack. Even Rodney had to admit that the north shore of the point had a stunning view. Lake Michigan sparkling under the late summer sun, all the way up to the foot of the loop. The Sears Tower and the Hancock Building bookending the skyline. It was clear enough today that even Navy Pier was visible. And he let his gaze rest on the enormous Ferris wheel for a long moment, before turning his attention to the methodical unpacking of his takeout. He wasn't stupid. He wasn't delusional enough to lie to himself about why he'd picked this place to come to hide in plain sight. Chicago would never have the cohesive, breathtaking beauty of Atlantis, but it had elements that made him feel like maybe he was at home. The way the city was mirrored in the lake at twilight, the way waves sounded as they washed up onto the limestone steps edging the parks, the way he could smell the water from his bedroom window. That wasn't an accident either. He couldn't sleep well without the sound of water anymore, not even faking it with one of those stupid wave machines from Sharper Image. He'd found a condo as close to the water as he could possibly manage, paying an arm and several legs for it. The first night he had jolted awake at the sound of revved engines, hot tires, odometers pushed past their everyday limits. Speed demons, taking advantage of Lakeshore's emptiness, of its irresistible curves that hugged the shoreline, of the way it threaded along the city like a vein waiting for a thick rush of blood to fill it. Absently, Rodney popped the lid off his pad tie, took a careful sniff. No lime, the receipt had said in red pen, underlined three times. But you couldn't be too careful. And then twirled his plastic fork into the mass of noodles. It wasn't a bad life, he told himself. The Fermi lab was top-notch, of course, because he wouldn't come any place that wasn't, beautiful floating city or not. His colleagues, and yes, the mental air quotes were necessary, thought too much of themselves, and didn't fear him enough. But the freaks of nature that were the undergrads were kind of a pleasant surprise. They weren't normal, was the thing. They were like grad students in undergraduate wrappings. They were more like him than any of the other students he'd been forced into lecture halls with, and that made Rodney wish that he'd come here when he'd started college. If there was any place a 15-year-old genus would have fit in, it was probably this campus. Quadrangle after quadrangle of socially inept individuals who held protests when the library decided to halt 24-hour service and the language requirement dropped from 2 years to one. Also, there was the Nobel Prize race among the faculty and alumni to consider. It was brilliantly obscene, and Rodney could just see his name printed on the t-shirts sold at the bookstore. When it happened, and it would, he'd mail one to Zelenka. Autographed. A faint hum, almost more felt than heard, made Rodney look up. He checked his watch, right on time. The noise got louder, and then louder still, and as he looked out over the skyline, a trio of F-22 Raptors shot out over the lake, dancing in the bright sky. For more than an hour, Rodney just watched, the remains of his lunch growing cold. Jet after jet maneuvered over the city, delighting the crowds at the air show and, no doubt, annoying the people just trying to get on with their lives with the steady stream of sonic booms. Rodney forcibly shut down the scientist part of him. No small feat. The part that started analyzing the aircraft, mentally tweaking them, giving them more power, better agility, greater range. He forced himself just to watch, and think of Shepard, and what he might see if he were here too. How he'd smile. Really smile, not just that half-assed grin you usually got. How he'd throw his head back and laugh that stupid laugh of his, because flying was the best thing in the world for John. Or at least, it was now. Now that Atlantis wasn't theirs anymore. A wave of homesickness hit him so strongly that Rodney closed his eyes, listening to the jets and imagining they were jumpers. His life now was nothing new. He'd been here before, alienating everyone in his path, letting his work become the only life he had. Only this time it was worse, because he'd seen how life could be. Seen what it meant to have a home. To have people around you could trust, and who actually cared if you didn't come back at the end of a mission. Not that there were missions anymore. Not unless facing the dangers of paper cuts while grading exams counted. Suddenly Rodney stood up, lifting an unsteady hand to rub one eye. He tossed the remnants of his takeout in a nearby trash can and stepped back onto the path, moving slowly, like every bone in his body ached. A jet screamed overhead, and Rodney shut his eyes again, embracing the sound like a prayer, letting it say everything he couldn't. I'm okay. Rodney let out a rushing breath of air, eyes flying open, and turned toward the voice. What? People always look different than they do in memories. The specifics of their faces, the way they move their hands, start to fade with time. The lieutenant colonel in Rodney's memories was all ridiculous hair and lazy slouches, a pastiche of beautiful near-generic features that were just enough Shepard to dull the ache of separation, but not enough John to remotely satisfy Rodney's gnawing, hungry sense of loss that had almost nothing to do with losing Pegasus. Rodney had forgotten the crinkles at the corners of John's eyes. He'd forgotten how much he looked like a 14-year-old kid when he stood around with his hands stuffed in his pockets. He'd forgotten the slight cant of his head when he was waiting for you to say something. Shepard? Rodney McKay was rarely speechless, but this was a moment where nothing seemed right. No, not right. Not enough. There were a few yards between them, but Rodney crossed them in a flash, and then his hands was fisting in John's shirt, pulling him close, wrapping his arms tight around him, burying his face in John's shoulder. Shepard gave a startled oof, and hugged McKay just as tightly, one broad hand smoothing slowly up the length of Rodney's back. Hey, buddy. Sorry it took me so long. Rodney wasn't ready to pull away, not just yet. None of it was right, he said faintly, his voice muffled in John's shirt. I tried and it's all half-baked. None of it's good enough. I know, Shepard interrupted quietly. And his voice told Rodney that yes, he did know. I tried to get away, far away from all of it as I could. Didn't work. They broke apart, finally. One of Rodney's hands still fisted tightly in John's shirt, like he was afraid the other man would bolt. For a long moment, they just looked at each other. Wasn't just the city, said John. Wasn't just that. Rodney shook his head mutely. The smile returned to John's face, and it looked more real than it probably had in a long, long time. City's only as good as her people. Another jet shot past the point. Shepard spared it a brief glance, smile widening. But then he looked back at Rodney, and it grew bigger still. Thought I'd stick around for a while, he said. And suddenly they could have been standing in the gate room after a mission, joking and taking their gear off and placing bets on whether it would be weird Athosian pseudo-pizza in the mess again. Rodney knew his lines. Oh, and I suppose you want to sleep on my futon until you find your own place, huh? Well, let me tell you this, Shepherd. If you use my towel in the morning and then don't hang it up and it gets all mildewy and disgusting, I'm having my allergist bill you directly. Ah, come on, Rodney. It'll be fun. We can stay up all night and paint our toenails and talk about boys. Or maybe TP your neighbours. I'm sure they can't hate you more than they already do, so no harm done, right? Wherever two or three are gathered, Rodney thought inexplicably, as he listened to Shepherd, watched the familiar way he loped and talked with his hands. Rodney'd never been much of a person for religion, or even God, but he thought there was definitely something about that idea. All it takes is two. Two can make something out of nothing. Two half-lives multiply into a universe. That's all it takes to go home.